Today with David, who's a Stanford professor and co-founder of Babylon. Bitcoin possibly enhancing the security or consensus mechanism of proof of stake blockchains.
In my earlier life, I used to do research in wireless infrastructure. 5 years ago, I read Nakamoto's white paper doing research in consensus protocol, blockchain consensus protocol. So that's our specialty. The more capital, the more secure the blockchain is. Your native token is usually a low market cap. One of the reasons why most of the Bitcoin sits idle is because bridging is considered a very high risk. So the simple thing that you can do on Bitcoin is you can put it in a so-called time lock deposit. It's called a spending condition in making this idle asset useful for the rest of the crypto economy. But another important function, which is essentially triggering the interest of Bitcoin holders, that a few months ago, there was a new development in the Bitcoin ecosystem called Ordinals.
WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi everyone, welcome at WaveAct. Today with David, who's a Stanford professor and co-founder of Babylon, a blockchain using Bitcoin's proof-of-work consensus mechanism. And today we'll talk about a super exciting topic, and that's Bitcoin possibly enhancing the security or consensus mechanism of proof-of-stake blockchains. And David wrote, at least two papers about this kind of topic. And so I'm super excited to have you here. Thanks for taking the time. And starting out, I want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, to let us know what you're currently working on, and whatever you think is worthwhile sharing.
Yeah, so hey, thanks, Kevin, for having me on the program. Let me just say a few words about myself. So I've been primarily a researcher. So I started my career as a professor at UC Berkeley. And then 8 years ago, I moved to Stanford. In my earlier life, I used to do research in wireless infrastructure, focusing on making the cell phones that we have right now work. It didn't work 20 years ago, but now it's working, so that's great. But now 20 years later, I decided to move on to do other things. And so 5 years ago, I read Nakamoto's white paper on Bitcoin, and I find it a very fascinating topic from a research point of view. And so I start assembling a research group at Stanford. We have now 7 students and postdocs, postdoctoral researchers at Stanford University doing research in consensus protocol, blockchain consensus protocol. So that's our specialty. And over the years, we've collaborated with industry groups as well. For example, we collaborate with Ethereum Foundation on improving the proof of stake Ethereum protocol before the merge. And so about a year and a half ago, we came up with this idea of, hey, actually, there's a lot of advantages combining Bitcoin security with proof of stake blockchain. So that's where the project Babylon come from. It's a startup. We started about a year and a half ago.
Awesome. Sounds exciting. Well, I obviously did some research on your project, right? And from my understanding, you will launch your mainnet next year or in the early next year, is that right?
Yeah, we're shooting for launching around the next halving.
Okay.
Next Bitcoin awesome. Halving.
Exciting. Great timing. Well, based on that, right, the main issue, just to summarize for the less technical people here, and please, David, correct me if I'm wrong from your point of view. Well, most proof of stake blockchains, if they launch, usually have the issue to meet that, let's say, necessary threshold of staked native assets to actually provide a good, let's say, or a decent security based on its consensus mechanism. And your papers, especially the last, the newest one, which I think has been released this month, right, focuses on actually making non-native assets like Bitcoin, for example, part of this consensus mechanism, right? How, or let's go from the personal standpoint first. How did you came up with this? Because that's quite out of the box. Like, what triggered that thought that you thought this is something that's feasible, doable, and actually makes sense?
Yeah. So just to start a little bit background. So proof of stake protocol, as you mentioned, is secured by capital. The more capital, the more secure the blockchain is. So the traditionally, proof of stake protocol has always been focused on launching a native token and then use that native token to secure the blockchain. Now, however, there are some issues here, especially when you start a new blockchain. Your native token is usually a low market cap. So low market cap means low security. And so to improve the security, you have to offer a very high inflation typically of the currency in order to attract people to invest in your blockchain and increase the market cap, increase the amount of value staked. And so this is causing a lot of problems for many new blockchains because new blockchains wants to focus on developing the application. They don't want to spend all this inflation on security, which is a means, but not really the ends of a blockchain. And so our idea is that if instead of, in addition to your native token, you can pull in a much, much larger and in some sense more stable asset like Bitcoin to stake on, to validate and secure your blockchain, that would be a double win situation because from the point of view of the blockchain, the proof of stake blockchain, now it has a much more stable capital to land on and potentially cheaper because it's such a large supply. And two, is from a point of view of the Bitcoin holders, right now most Bitcoin holders are earning almost zero yield on their Bitcoin, they're just holding it. Now it is an opportunity for them to earn some upside by investing in a proof of stake blockchain and earning upside on the reward from that blockchain. So we think it's a double win situation.
I have to be honest, the first thing that I thought when reading your or skimming your paper, right, was like, how is that supposed to work in a way that you don't, also that you're not subject to the same security issues that bridges face, for example, or any cross-chain protocols, especially since Bitcoin is non-EVM compatible and a lot of proof of stake blockchain, for example, are EVM chains, EVM networks. So we'd love to know what your approach, maybe on a superficial or also in depth level, was.
Sure. Yeah. Let me try to deconstruct your question into multiple aspects. So first, you're correct. One of the reasons why most of the Bitcoin sits idle is because bridging is considered a very high risk operation for Bitcoin holders, and they don't want to bridge the Bitcoin from the Bitcoin chain. And that's why, since most of the DeFi activities are happening on elsewhere, not on the Bitcoin chain, there's a little, very little way for Bitcoin holders to earn yield. So our design is really, we basically figure out that to achieve this particular use case of staking, there is no need actually to bridge the Bitcoin. So you can think of bridging the Bitcoin allows you to do anything you want on the other chain, but you're subject to bridging risk. What we're saying here is that if you focus on a very specific use case, but very important use case of providing security to the proof of stake chain, then the technology that we develop says that actually bridging is not needed. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's number one part to your question. The second part about EVM or not EVM compatible. Actually, because our security is happening at the consensus level, okay? So this is one level below the EVM. And so it doesn't matter actually whether the chain is EVM or non-EVM. Our technology still works.
And how does it actually work, right? Because I can imagine that you have, for example, Bitcoin smart contract, if you call it that way, right? Where you basically stake your Bitcoins and the destination chain, or not destination chain, but the proof of stake chain, then somewhat maybe gets a validity proof or something like that. I don't know, it's just an assumption on my end that testifies, well, Bitcoins have been staked and you get your rewards on that proof of stake chain. That would be my first thought. Would you mind correcting me to your solution? That would be awesome.
Yeah. So I think what you say is at a high level quite correct.
Okay.
But let me elaborate a little bit more. So when you put, first of all, there's no smart contract on Bitcoin. There's no smart contract on Bitcoin. In other words, you can't write an arbitrarily complex contract. Okay. However, there are something simple that you can do on Bitcoin. And essentially, our technology is to use what is simple on Bitcoin and still achieve our purpose. And that's really the challenge of the technology. So the simple thing that you can do on Bitcoin is you can put it in a so-called time lock deposit. There is a ability on the Bitcoin script that Nakamoto came up with that enables you to put it on a time lock. Say, time lock it for 6 months. Okay. So you can do that. Now, once you put it on a time lock, what does that mean? That means you have entered a particular transaction on the Bitcoin chain. The transaction says, oh, okay, this one Bitcoin is now put in a time lock for 6 months. Okay. Now, everybody in the world, including the proof of stake chain, can actually see this transaction on the Bitcoin chain. It's confirmed on the Bitcoin chain. So this is the validated proof that you actually mentioned. It doesn't require any fancy technology like ZK proof or that kind of thing, but it's just a transaction entered into the Bitcoin chain confirmed and everybody can see, okay? So at this point, the proof of stake chain knows that, oh, okay, this guy has locked up his one Bitcoin to secure my chain, okay? However, what is the key challenge though is that staking has a very, very important aspect to it, which is called slashing. It's like, you know, you go to an Airbnb, right? You need to put down some deposit to guarantee that you won't trash the Airbnb upon departure. So after you put the deposit and you behave properly and you leave, then you can get a deposit back. So that deposit is very important to ensure good behavior. And the similar thing here is that if you stake the one Bitcoin on a particular proof of stake chain, the proof of stake chain has to be sure that your behavior is guaranteed to be good. You won't trash the chain. And the way to do that is the proof of stake chain needs to have an ability to be able to slash or take away this one Bitcoin or a fraction of this one Bitcoin upon bad behavior so that no bad behavior can happen. So that is actually the challenge of the whole problem. How to do slashing.
And the communication between those networks basically happens through Cosmos in the blockchain communication protocol, right? Because
So Cosmos is certainly one ecosystem mm-hmm. that we have collaborated with a lot, but our technology actually works in general. Mm-hmm. The communication is actually all it needs is to send transactions onto the Bitcoin chain. So we don't need a very complicated communication protocol.
But okay, the good thing is the funds will be slashed on Bitcoin and so on, obviously, right? Everything happens there. But
yes,
how does the Bitcoin chain determine
know that, right?
That
yeah,
exactly.
So the Bitcoin chain is not very smart. So the Bitcoin chain can't look at the proof of stake chain and then try to figure out what's happening over there. Okay. So instead, our design is the other way around. Is that if something bad happened on the proof of stake chain, okay, we want to be able to enable anybody actually to go and send a transaction to the Bitcoin chain to slash the funds. So your audience may have heard of a concept called fraud proof. For example, this roll-up technology called Arbitrum, they use fraud proof, right? Fraud proof basically means that, hey, something bad happens, this behavior happens on the roll-up, then it is used to send back to the main chain, in this case, Ethereum, to tell Ethereum to, you know, slash the fund or revert the transaction, etc. So the design here is somewhat similar. We allow the proof of stake relayer to see bad behavior and then send a fraud proof like thing back to the Bitcoin chain. However, there's a huge difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum, is that Bitcoin has a smart contract that enables it to process the fraud proof and understand the fraud proof. Bitcoin has no smart contract, and so Bitcoin doesn't understand anything, except for one thing. The only thing that Bitcoin knows how to do is to spend the Bitcoin. It's called a spending condition. Okay, So basically we have to design our fraud-proof system using cryptography in such a way that all Bitcoin needs to do is to take the message and say, oh, this is a spending message, and I will slash it based on this spending message.
Okay. That basically answers my next question, because I just read that you're actually revealing the private key, and I just thought, well, how is that supposed to work, right? You won't just slash the full thing, right? If you have like 10 bitcoins staked, you won't hopefully slash 10 bitcoins just because of one misbehavior. So that explains that part, right? And
yeah, so about slashing a 10 bitcoin, right? So this is, slashing a 10 Bitcoin would be the extreme point of the design. It would be a very, very strong security to the proof of stake chain, but it would be rather scary potentially for the Bitcoin holder. So in any design, you're always trading off between the staker's peace of mind and the proof of stake chain security. So the way this can be done is actually quite simple, is that you can actually design your contract on a Bitcoin chain in such a way that, for example, you put 90% of the money in a time lock, and 10% of money, only 10% of that can be slashed. So this is possible because you can actually specify two outputs on a Bitcoin transaction. One output goes to 90%, always lock, and only can be drawn but cannot be slashed. 10% is also time locked but can be slashed. So that is completely possible.
And are these parameters like this ratio something that these proof of stake chains can choose themselves or the community? Yeah, okay.
Correct.
That's pretty cool.
Correct. Because that particular contract is signed between the staker and the proof of stake chains that it wants to stake to validate. So different proof of stake chain may have different parameters. Some may prefer 10% slashing. Some may prefer 5% slashing. Some may prefer 50% slashing. In the current day chains, for example, Ethereum is pretty high. It's around 50%. Cosmos chains that you just mentioned is lower. It's about 5%. So different chains have different parameters.
Mm-hmm. When I hear all this, research is usually very challenging, especially in the cryptography area, right? And what I'm wondering is, what was, in your opinion, the most challenging aspect coming up with that? Like, where did you have you been stuck at all, or what was the point where you were like, okay, that's difficult?
Yeah. So the biggest challenge is really the following. Okay. Fraud. There are many types of frauds, right? Bitcoin is dumb. It cannot interpret anything. So now, to be able to convert sort of many types of fraud into something simple that Bitcoin can interpret, which is basically spending the transaction through this private key release mechanism, is the biggest challenge. And to achieve this, we bring on sort of two sets of expertise to solve this problem. One is our expertise in consensus protocol design. Because in consensus protocol design, we understand what are the bad actions that a protocol participant, a validator, can achieve. And through this understanding, we redesign the consensus protocol in such a way that all the bad action can be converted into this simple event. Second, we've layered on top of that a special cryptographic scheme, which upon this simple bad event can force the release of the private key. So combining these two set of expertise, which is actually quite interesting because, you know, in the world of researchers, actually on blockchain, there are researchers who knows a lot about cryptography, and there are researchers who knows a lot about consensus protocol. But typically, these two sets, they don't overlap a whole lot. And so we kind of collaborate with different partners to try to get these two together. Plus, we also need some pretty deep understanding of the Bitcoin script to get this whole thing to work. So I would say that in some sense, if you think about our research, not to elevate ourselves, but just as an analogy, is that this kind of research is a bit of the same flavor as Nakamoto's white paper. Because when he designed Bitcoin, actually, he needs to combine many different expertise from many different areas to be able to solve this really hard problem. So he combined this idea of proof of work, he combined this idea of cryptography, public key cryptography, he combined this idea of incentive from game theory, and he combined some ideas from control theory in terms of tuning the difficulty of the proof of work chain to solve all these problems. So I think our work is of that flavor.
And that's pretty exciting, yeah. Well, you started with integrating Bitcoin liquidity, basically, right? I'm wondering, well, understand why from a consensus perspective and But from a mindset perspective, it definitely makes sense. But why or what's your perspective on having these non-native assets from other non-native other proof-of-stake blockchains, for example? If you launch your own new proof-of-stake network, you could use the liquidity from Ethereum. You could use the liquidity from Solana, which is definitely more difficult again, right? And these kind of things. Because they offer a more complex toolkit to actually achieve that mission in an easy way. Is that something that you plan to do? Or do you want to stick to Bitcoin as a source of liquidity in that sense?
Ah, okay, I got your question. Yeah, so this general idea that you mentioned of using a foreign asset, right, to secure a proof of stake chain is actually quite general. It doesn't have to be Bitcoin. It could be another proof of stake chain even, right? So I agree with you. Now to us though, the most important reason why we are focused on Bitcoin as the source of security or the source of the asset is multiple folds. One is that Bitcoin is by far the largest asset in the world, crypto asset in the world, 600 billion. It's about 2 to 3 times as big as Ethereum and many, many times as big as Solana. So it's just a huge source of capital. And what is more interesting is that although this is the largest crypto asset in the crypto ecosystem, it is also the most idle asset. It's the most idle asset. It's mainly a store of value and is not used to improve or facilitate the economy, the crypto economy. So we view our technology as one important step in utilizing this idle asset, in making this idle asset useful for the rest of the crypto economy. Now, the very good use case here is because our staking protocol is a trustless staking protocol. So it has the highest possible security, and it could be a very good first step for the Bitcoin holders to venture out into the non-Bitcoin world because it is very secure. Now, once you start venturing out and you start earning other coins yield, then a second step could be that, hey, you can now do other things which may not be as secure, but now you're more willing to do other things. So we view our protocol on the one hand as providing an important function of providing security, but another important function, which is essentially triggering the interest of Bitcoin holders in participating in the economy in a broader sense. So maybe one can draw an analogy. Your audience is probably aware that a few months ago, there was a new development in the Bitcoin ecosystem called Ordinals. Ordinals is NFT, basically, for Bitcoin. And Ordinals, I think, is a very good example of this kind of work. That is a particular use case of Bitcoin that triggers people's interest, renewed interest, in Bitcoin more broadly than just a store of value. So we view our project as of similar flavor, but focusing on security.
Okay. Well, just thinking about that research in general, right? We see the same issue with almost every crypto protocol on the application layer as well, right? Doesn't need to be the consensus layer. If we think about lending protocols, which you have compared in your blog article as well, for example, that's a potential business or use case for that research too. Or what's your take on that part? Or do you think it's more applicable on the consensus layer only?
Yeah, so the one reason why we're focusing on the consensus layer is because staking has a very interesting distinction from lending, for example. So staking, the so-called risk you take, is basically the slashing risk. And this slashing risk is a fully self-controllable risk in a sense that you go to an Airbnb, if you behave nicely, you don't expect your deposit to be removed from you. So this is fully under your control. On the other hand, if you do lending, for example, then you're subjected to market conditions. So I think slashing, among all the crypto investment or crypto DeFi activities, is kind of the lowest, most controllable risk. And so we felt that starting from this one would be a good thing for Bitcoin holders.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. I just was curious on my end, right? Okay, well, we have a tradition introduced since our last podcast, and that's the previous guest always asks a question to the next guest without knowing who the next guest will be. So, and the question would be, what is the most interesting thing you found out that exists in Web3 that really surprised you?
Yeah. So I've been working in the Web3 space for the past 5 years. So I think my answer, since the question does not know who he's at or she is, was asking, so I'll answer this question from a researcher point of view. So from a researcher point of view, I find the most fascinating about the Web3 space is that there's a collection of really smart people working in this space from a research point of view. And the people are very broad, and also they come from all directions, and they're all just extremely brilliant. And I really enjoy working with these people. And they're not only academics, but mainly also from industry, founders. For example, I collaborate with a lot of founders from the Cosmos ecosystems that you mentioned briefly, and they're all just amazingly strong researchers, as well as entrepreneurs. So that is one thing I find it very impressive after spending a few years in the crypto space.
Okay, awesome. Well, in that case, do you have a question for the next guest as well?
Yes, my question for the next guest is, what do you think is the iPhone moment for Web3? When is it coming? And what form would it come in?
That's a brilliant question. Okay, awesome. In that sense, I would say thanks, David, for taking the time talking with me today. Is there anything left you want to share? I definitely will put all your links into the video description and so on. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. Same for the audience. And yeah, thank you for watching.
Yeah, it's great to be here. So thanks for the very enjoyable conversation.
WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.